This is the Quality News Network. Stocks rallied on Wall Street today. We'll have the closing numbers for you later in our newscast. Seven Marines and a Navy corpsman were charged today with murder and other charges in connection with the August 26th death of a disabled Iraqi civilian. The eight accused service members are being detained at California's Camp Pendleton. If convicted, they could be put to death. Near Baghdad today, at least 85 mostly Shiite factory workers were forced into a bus and minivan by armed gunmen. 30 people, mostly women and children, were later released, but the fate of the others is unknown. Meanwhile, an insurgent group says it plans to execute four Russian embassy workers who were abducted earlier this month because Moscow has not withdrawn troops from Chechnya. Military investigators now say that two U.S. soldiers who were shot to death in Iraq 2 years ago were murdered. Their deaths were originally attributed to an ambush, but criminal investigators now say the men were shot to death by at least one of the Iraqi soldiers who was patrolling with them. In Baghdad today, another of Saddam Hussein's lawyers was murdered. He's the third lawyer to be killed since the start of Saddam's trial 8 months ago. Saddam is reportedly on a hunger strike to protest the killing. In Gaza, two Palestinians were killed and 13 others wounded, including a pregnant woman and four children, in an Israeli airstrike. Officials are investigating why the missiles missed their target, reportedly a car carrying Islamic insurgents, and instead hit a house. On Capitol Hill, Senate Democrats are divided on when to withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq. There are two proposals on the table, both of them non-binding, with different timelines. Meanwhile, Republicans call both plans cut-and-run strategies. In Washington, the U.S. is rejecting calls from North Korea for direct talks. President Bush has warned the country not to test long-range missiles and says North Korea must follow international agreements. The U.S. activated its missile defense system yesterday. On Capitol Hill, House Speaker Dennis Hastert says the House will begin new hearings in July on the immigration issue. He says that will provide a forum for House members to hear what Americans across the country are saying about the debate. Political analysts say that probably means immigration legislation will not pass Congress this year. Near Sedona, Arizona, firefighters continue battling a nearly 1,800-acre wildfire that has forced hundreds to evacuate. Fire crews are also fighting wildfires in Colorado, California, New Mexico.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The Senate has killed a proposal pushed by Democrats to raise the federal minimum wage. The raise would have lifted it from $5.15 to $7.25 an hour by 2009. The Federal Communications Commission has approved a new plan for funding phone service subsidies. Under the plan, internet telephone companies must now pay more into a fund for low-income households, which may raise rates for everyone. Shell Oil may soon begin paying royalties on higher energy prices. Language in the contract Shell signed in the 1990s that would have prevented payment of such royalties were inadvertently left out. MySpace.com administrators say they will place restrictions on how adults may contact underage users. Still, there's no way to verify anyone's true age on the website. The Veterans Affairs Department is offering free credit monitoring to the 17 million vets whose personal information was stolen last month. Officials hope that will protect against identity theft. The FCC says it will begin reviewing media ownership rules. They'll determine how many radio station and television stations one owner can have. Southwest Airlines may give up its first-come, first-served seating policy in favor of assigned seats. A test run on the concept will begin next month. Lightsweet crude settled at $70.33 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 105 points, NASDAQ up 34, S&P 500 up 12. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Second Date. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Of course, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Wednesday, at least here. And, of course, it being Wednesday, well, Wednesday's a very special time for us here on Head On, because Wednesday at 6 minutes past the hour, Wednesday means that it's prayer meeting edition right here on Head On. A little something special in the middle of the week.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
You know, I love that clip because somehow or another it makes sense to me. And of course, you know, it's not how apropos. How often does this happen? It's Wednesday. It's prayer meeting edition. And it's the summer solstice, and since it is the summer solstice, I have to tell you that Agnes and I are stark naked. Pagans
no!
that we are.
No,
pagans
we're
that
not.
We are stark naked, being as, you know, trying to honor our pagan ancestral roots. We're both, we're both Scots-Irish, Welsh. And so this time of year, 2,000-3,000 years ago, our forebears were running around naked in the woods.
And it's going to stay that way.
And you know. So, it's naked radio in honor of our forebears. It is the summer solstice. There's still a lot of daylight in the sky here in the mountains and hollers and hills of wild, wonderful West Virginia at our remote, undisclosed studio location. And I am glad to have you along. Now, we've got a guest coming in tonight. Well, I mean, you know, coming in on the phone. You understand how this works. We will be joined probably at the bottom of the hour by a gentleman by the name of Jerry Wilde, W-I-L-D-E. Author of a wonderful, wonderful book. And that book is titled Jesus Was a Liberal. And I have read it. And, you know, this thing is, this book is just full of facts and figures. You know, that's the nice thing about reading books by liberals and progressives. They can actually use facts. They don't have to just make stuff up. I was out and about a little bit today, got to listen to a little bit of right-wing radio. And, you know, it's the same old tired crap. Why won't they say nothing nice about what's happening in Iraq? Well, Goober, because nothing nice is happening in Iraq. I heard that, the Media Research Center, this was on one of the local stations, and he was being interviewed, they keep talking about the so-called murders in Haditha and these other soldiers who have been arrested for covering up a so-called murder. But the liberal media won't give hardly any time at all to the people who have won medals and stuff. Really. It's the same old tired crap. I caught a few minutes of Brush Lintball, Flush Flemball, the oxymoron, whatever you want to call him. Mr. Palondial Cyst. You ever read the official medical description of a palondial cyst? Ew. If either one of us had one of those, we would not be sitting here naked right now. Because they're gross. But, Flemball was going on and on about Oh, but well, what the upshot of it is, he said we're losers. The peace, you know, the peace people. They don't understand that you can't just disarm the world. My friends, we need armaments. Armaments are what keeps the world at peace. Well, where are these peaceniks? Where are these peaceniks when it comes time to discuss the fact that more people live in harmony and peace and freedom now because of the United States than because of any other country on the face of the planet? This is the kind of crap that can make you just swerve right off the road. Phone pole, bang. Yeah, oh! I despise them. I do. I despise them. So, you know, and it was interesting. I mean, this was a live program. These were live programs I was listening to. What did I hear? I can tell you, I heard Bupkis about the Florida prison scandal and the shooting. Flush couldn't be bothered to deal with the minimum wage, at least not during the time that I was listening. Oh, that's the phone we forgot to unplug. Never a dull moment around here, you know. Now, honey, don't get your toe stuck in the fan there. We don't have time to run to the hospital this evening. And you'd have to put your clothes on and everything. I know, it's the solstice. You want to be naked.
God, I hate you.
It was your idea. Well, at any rate, it's 12 minutes past the hour. And I'm sure it's available at Powell's, Barnes & Noble, that kind of thing. But if you go through the link at whiterosesociety.org to the booksellers, you can get your hands on Jesus Was a Liberal. And I think you will find it quite interesting, because fact after fact after fact is right there. And there are chapters that might be familiar to you, because, among other things, one of the songs that our compadre and brother-in-arms, or brother-in-microphones, or brother-in-whatever-it-is we're brothers in, Bruce Birch, one of the songs he uses is David Rovick's tune called Who Would Jesus Bomb? Well, there it is, chapter 4, Who Would Jesus Bomb? And a piece-by-piece, just detailed taking apart, deconstruction, if you will, of folks like Pat Robertson, chapters like Limping Away from Eden. You'll find it quite interesting. And I love the quote on the Bible verse on the back of the book is from John chapter 20, verse 14. They have taken my Lord away, she said, and I don't know where they have put him. And, of course, nothing could be truer than today. And these freaks who have Jesused up politics and have, you know, the things that they do to that poor man's memory and reputation. Can you imagine slaughtering 150, 175, 200,000 innocent Iraqis in the name of Jesus? And, you know, no, that wasn't the official name of, the Operation Iraqi Liberation for Jesus' sake. No. But Dear Leader says that his favorite philosopher is Jesus Christ. He's from them Nazareth Christs. He's not from the Kennebunkport Christs. That's his last name, Christ. You know that, don't you? No, when you say your favorite philosopher is Jesus Christ, and then you go and you murder 200,000 innocent civilians, does it not follow that you're doing it in Jesus' name as well as yours and mine? I kind of think it does. It's either that or... It's either that or when they were asking George Bush, you know, who's your favorite philosopher? Philosopher, Jesus Christ. Ah, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Because, you know, they cover for him that way. Oy. So, you know, coming up, we've got a nice little conversation going on with Jerry Wilde. Jesus Was a Liberal. how the conservative agenda is a rejection of Christ's teachings. He'll join us at the bottom of the hour. And this is Prayer Meeting Edition, so we've got lots of fun right-wing religion industry stories. Stick around, by all means. And you know, through the course of all of this, your phone calls are always welcome. 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, head on. Okay? And by the way, if you weren't with us last night to catch it, please run by thankyoult.org and sign the petition on behalf of First Lieutenant Aaron Watata. Because I get the idea that Lieutenant Watata understands the idea that maybe Jesus wouldn't bomb anybody. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Has resulted in the unthinkable. Hell has frozen over.
Traffic. All this traffic. When will it end? Doesn't it seem like there are more cars on the road every day?
As our population continues to grow, our daily commute isn't the only thing changing. Rapid population growth around the world threatens our quality of life in other ways. It endangers the environment, economic development, even the future health of our children. U.S. support for voluntary family planning programs worldwide improves everyone's quality of life and helps slow population growth. Find out how you can help increase support for these crucial programs. We're Population Action International, working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website.
Nickelodeon asks kids to talk to their parents about,
you know,
no way,
boy and girl stuff.
A girl in my school, in elementary school, had told me about it, but she told me the wrong thing. She told me something totally wrong. And when I asked my mom, I didn't know how she was going to react to the question. But then I figured it'd be better to ask her and get the right information. So I went out and I got my books and I brought pictures and I explained, this is what really happened. I was shocked my mom told me the truth, which was totally different from what she said. So that's how I kind of handled it. I realized that she was a little bit uncomfortable. Her top lip gets really skinny. It's like this.
Sometimes I can feel my lips getting skinny because she's brought it to my attention before I didn't realize, and now I can feel it happening, and I'm kind of afraid.
But it doesn't work.
Talk together.
A part of the big help.
For more information, go to nick.com.
Helps me a lot.
Welcome to Wednesday Night Prayer Meeting with your host, Brother Bob Kincaid. Put your hands together, raise your eyes to the light, and welcome him. The truth will set you free. And now, here is Brother Bob Kincaid.
Thanks for sticking around. I'm Bob. This is Head On. It's Wednesday evening, Prayer Meeting Edition. Now, you know, just because it's Prayer Meeting Edition doesn't mean we ignore the rest of the world. Because, quite frankly, very frequently, the things that look like they might not have a prayer meeting nexus, if you will, actually do. What do I mean by that? Well, what I mean is, How can you know about what happened with the minimum wage in the Senate today? Edward Kennedy tacked a minimum wage bill onto a Pentagon funding bill. And then Bill Frist, in turn, rotten, filthy, disgusting cat killer. Bill Frist put a poison pill on Ted Kennedy's amendment to kill the minimum wage increase. Is there anything that could be more fitting or more proper for us to deal with on a prayer meeting edition solstice night, evening, afternoon, than the question of how we treat the hardest working and poorest among us? $5.15 an hour. That's it. That's the minimum wage. Now, you can do the math far better than I. 40 hours a week at $5.15 an hour. That's a little better than $200. So Daddy does that. That's what? $800 a month? Now, there are a lot of you who live in places that are not nearly as rural and as where I am. Tell me, what do you get for $800 a month in anywhere in California? What do you get for $800 a month in the upper Midwest? What do you get for $800 a month somewhere around Boston? What do you get for $800 a month in Atlanta, in Greensboro, Charlotte, Richmond? $800, and that's it. There's no more money. That's what you got. You got $800 a month. That's it. Okay, the wife. She's got a minimum wage job, too. Woo! Living large. $1,600 a month. Don't spend it all in one place. And don't forget, they're taxpayers. So FICA comes out. And the payroll tax, withholdings, state withholdings. So what started out $1,600 a month, that drops. That's, maybe $1,300 a month. Now, are there any children to all of this? You see what I'm saying? Dadgummit, I'm in a pickle here. My lovely wife and producer is off helping my dad. The phone is ringing, and I've got to deal with it, so please stand by. Okay, here's how it works. The thing is not ringing in the order of the Hunt Group, the six lines that we have here. So I can pretty well guess that that's not a show caller.
Yes, hold on.
Okay, so here we go. At any rate, it's coming up. It's about 29 minutes past the hour.
I'm fine. How are you?
And we need to take a break.
Hold on a second, Robert, okay?
We need to take a break. When we come back, I believe we will be having our scheduled conversation. Is that correct, Agnes?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so our friend Jerry Wilde, author of Jesus Was a Liberal, on the other side of the break when we come back. For right now, and forevermore, this is the Head On Radio Network. And I'm your genial host, Brother Bob Kincaid. Brother Bob's Cathedral of Common Sense. We'll be back.
Yellow and blue make green.
Well, a cow pie really isn't a pie.
Come on, Chris, open your eyes!
Remember, you're always teaching. Teach carefully. React with rage, and kids will learn it's okay to do the same. Keep your cool, and kids will do likewise. For advice, visit actagainstviolence.org. Brought to you by MetLife Foundation, National Association for the Education of Young Children, and the Ad Council.
Johnson's. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2.
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello. This is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children has doubled, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children will use them. Log on to earthshare.org today and find out how you can help. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for sticking around. 26 minutes or so before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid, and joining us on the phone right now, the author of Jesus Was a Liberal, How the Conservative Agenda is a Rejection of Christ's Teachings, Jerry Wilde. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I am, Bob.
Such a pleasure to speak with you this evening, and thanks for sharing your book with me. Let's start with the basics, not to be facetious, but what possessed you to write such a thing?
You know, I think I had several starts and stops on this, and I think as I was watching what the conservatives were, how they were manipulating the image of what it meant to be a Christian, eventually I just had to say, you know, somebody's got to point out what's in the gospel and compare that with what the conservative movement is doing here in America, and those two are pretty far removed from one another. So I just felt like, boy, somebody needs to speak up and point out the difference between those two visions.
Well, I'll be quite honest. When I first sat down with the book, Jerry, I expected to see a sort of a sterile analysis of the words of Yeshua, and some sort of a putting forward of proof of his liberal philosophy. Instead, I find that you have taken apart these hateful, filthy right-wing positions and misrepresentations of Jesus very strongly. Now, are you a theologian by trade?
No, you know, I'm not. I'm a psychologist and a college professor. But you know, I mean, I'm a Christian and a devout believer in Jesus and his teachings and Almost never ever miss a Sunday, and have taught Sunday school, and so I'm, you know, I am no means a biblical expert, but I can read the Gospels, and you know, I think I can get the big picture of what Jesus was trying to convey to us. So yeah, that's my my only training is you know, my understanding of what Jesus was here to tell us and teach us.
Well, how has this gone over in your home church?
You know, it's interesting. My wife was not at all thrilled about me writing this book because she was afraid it would cause problems. So far, it no one has mentioned it to me. I haven't gone out of my way to publicize it here in the area because I don't want to upset people. But I'm glad to sit down and have a cup of coffee and a conversation with anybody about, you know, anything I've written or said in the book. So, but I don't see how anyone could take issue with, you know, I'm just saying here's what Jesus said, here's what the conservatives are doing. You know, I don't see how those two are related.
Well, you know, you use some pretty strong language, Jerry. Religious. I'm looking at in your chapter, The Real Jesus. I've gone after the book with a highlighter, I must admit. You refer to the phrase religious fascism, and then equate it with one of my favorite stories in the last couple of years. The excommunicating Baptist minister Chan Chandler of East Waynesboro Baptist Church in North Carolina.
Yeah. Well, you know, to me, I don't think religious fascism. I mean, to me, that is a perfect example of what religious fascism is. Believe this way, or you don't get to believe, or you don't get to worship here. And boy, I don't think. I don't think the conservatives have a monopoly on what, you know, Jesus said or what he taught. So. Yeah, if my language comes off as a little harsh, it's after 6 years of watching basically people lie about, you know, what liberals are about and what conservatives are about. So I'm a wee bit frustrated, Bob.
Well, I can well, believe me,
yeah,
we're,
sure.
The frustration runs pretty freely around here,
yeah,
too.
Sure it does.
What is in the long run? What is are you aiming this book at other liberals to try to teach them to stand up for liberal Christians, or is this sort of a sharp stick poking at the conservative religion industry?
No, I think it's more really my goal was to give liberal Christians or progressive Christians or whoever you want to refer to that group to give them some talking points to be able to say, well, you know what, if you folks are so family friendly, you know, and you're so traditional family, then why did your party oppose the Family Medical Leave Act? And why are there more uninsured children now? Why are there more children going to bed hungry each and every night while you're giving away billions of dollars to millionaires? I mean, you know, just to point out some of the realities of what's going on in terms of following the policy. I mean, it's almost hard to keep up with what the Bush administration has been doing. It's almost a, you know, a 24-hour-a-day, you know, assault on the middle class. And yet they're the family of traditional American values that they would have us believe, and I just don't see that.
Well, I remember when the Reverend Jim Wallace and several other members of the liberal Christian community were arrested outside the Capitol for protesting the recent budget debacle.
Right.
Someone asked one of the right-wing, I call it the religion industry, Jerry.
Yeah, that's a good word.
Because, you know, they're out there they're hawking merchandise.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Jesus would buy this.
Yeah.
Someone asked a spokesman, I think, for James Dobson.
Oh, yeah.
They asked him why he wasn't there protesting a budget that cuts out funding for the poor. And he said, well, that's really not part of our focus.
Right.
You know, along the way, did you happen to calculate how many times Jesus refers to the poor in the Gospels?
No, I have never done that, but I've heard people talk about it. Literally the hundreds, if not the thousands of times he focuses on the way we should treat the poor, and yet the poor are basically looked, you know, people just don't in the conservative movement just aren't concerned. They just honestly don't care. If you happen to be poor, well, that's tough, you know, go get another job, work a third shift job, and if again, I don't think that's, you know, you know, the idea that Jesus had for the way we should treat our...
Well, hundreds of references to the poor, and yet barely, I don't even think even one reference to, here's the hot button issue of the day, not one reference to homosexuality.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know what? This is something I've been pondering, Bob, and just hear this out. I'll just briefly a quick story. You're right.
Sure.
There's not a single message, not a single word about homosexuality in the Gospels. Yet Jesus very clearly talks about divorce is sin. And unless in the case of marital unfaithfulness, you should not divorce your wife. Now, when Jesus clearly comes down, there's no room for interpretation on what he says about divorce. Why aren't people up in arms about basically a 40 to 50% divorce rate? Why aren't they picketing and protesting and starting websites, God hates divorcees or Jesus hates divorcees? Why is, I just don't get why that's such a hot button issue when there's other things Jesus very clearly said that they seem to ignore. I just don't get it.
Well, I don't either, except unless you look at it from a marketing strategy,
yeah.
Jerry.
Right. Oh, I know. I mean, yeah, you can't come down against, divorce when, and listen, we all have friends and family that have been through divorce. I'm not saying I'm, that way. What I'm saying is when they hang on so literally to, these references in the Bible, and it very clearly talks about divorce, but nobody that I hear from the right wing, that's just not an issue. Nobody talks about that at all.
Well, and you can't, frankly, you can't have, if this is the Christian nation that the right-wing religion industry wants to say that it is or should be, mm-hmm. You can't go to war in Iraq.
Yeah, well, it's pretty hard to see a lot of wiggle room in terms of what Jesus would think about anywhere from 30 to 50,000, dead in Iraq and the untold carnage and orphans and... all the things that war brings us. And it's just absolutely heartbreaking to watch this country lose its moral compass. It's just hard to sit back and watch.
And in the seventh chapter of your book, you take on the right and racism. Of course, it's long been my stated position on this show and off of it, Jerry,
mm-hmm.
That frankly the Republican Party is. The Klan in the Brooks Brothers suit.
Yeah. I think they play the race card very, very deftly and very subtly, but it is no question in my mind either that is part of the separation of, it's almost like code words, I think unquestionably it's there. It's there.
Well, the school voucher issue has its genesis in the white flight from the public schools following Brown versus Board of Education.
Right.
Hateful old Southern unreconstructed segregationists left the Democratic Party and fled to the Republican Party, and they're still there.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the great quote about when the civil rights legislation was signed? They said that, I fear we've given the South to the conservatives for the next 50 years.
Yeah, that was LBJ.
Yeah, and he was right.
Well, he was right, but he did the right thing anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And to me, that's real leadership, is saying, I know this is going to, create havoc in my party, and I know it's going to cost us down the road. Here's the right thing to do, and I'm going to do it.
Well, let me ask you where you stand and with the tack that you've taken or the direction you've gone in your book, and especially, the chapter on racism. Where does... the current so-called illegal alien debate fit in?
I'll tell you, I think a lot about these issues, and that is one of the issues that I have a really hard time coming up with a consistently clear position. And I'm not trying to be coy or anything. I just sit back and I look at it and I say, as a nation, you have to be able to defend your borders. You have to be able to keep people that want to do us harm out. But yet, how do you not allow people who want to come here for a better living? I honestly don't know a good answer to that question. I'm preparing for a course I'm going to be teaching in the fall, and I was studying about immigration policies over the last couple hundred years, and it just dawned on me, what's going on right now with this situation is exactly the same thing that's gone on in every wave of immigration in the history of our nation, that people come here for economic reasons, and they come and they do work that we really would rather not do ourselves. And then at a certain point, we look around and say, there's too many, Chinese here or, Filipino or whatever the race is. And then we say, let's pass a law to stop them. And, it's like, it just hit me like a ton of bricks reading this chapter the other day. It's exactly the same thing we've been doing for 150 years.
Well, on page 96 of your book in your Who Would Jesus Bomb segment, Jerry, you quote the Bible. You quote from Matthew 25, 31 through 46. And I don't know how you can engage. I don't know how anyone, I don't mean you, right. You know what I mean. I don't know how anyone can engage in the immigration debate, for instance, or the gay marriage debate, or the race debate, or minimum wage debate, or the health care debate, right. Any of these debates. Right. I was raised in the Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
And I was down, you know, I was a little kid down in the basement, being taught by some precious little old blue-haired ladies.
Yes. Every church has those people, exactly.
And they teach some really basic, good, solid values down there in the basement.
Right, right.
And I can't imagine any of those topics I just mentioned.
Yeah.
And you quote it very, very plainly. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in."
Yep. Yep. You know, and when you take a step back and you get through all the political shenanigans and you really look at, you know, if you're trying to live your life as a Christian, it makes it incredibly easy to decide what to do, what's the right thing to do. I mean, you just stop and go, you know, these people are the least of these. And Jesus talked about how we should treat the less fortunate, and it gets a lot easier. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, this is not rocket science.
No, it is. And, you know, it's funny because I've had people say, you know, "What do you mean Jesus was a liberal?" And I'm like, well, have you really thought about what Jesus said about, you know, have you read the Beatitudes about, you know, blessed are the peacemakers, you know, blessed are the meek, blessed are the poor? I mean, who do you think is defending those positions? It sure as heck isn't a conservative.
No, and I mentioned before you called in, Jerry, I heard a little bit of America's favorite talk radio drug abuser, Rush Limbaugh, today.
Yeah.
And he was making fun of people who seek peace in the world, and he said they're just life's losers.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where everybody's got to make their own kind of moral values. And, you know, God bless Rush Limbaugh. I mean, I pray for folks like Rush, and I hope he gets his life straightened out. You know, and at the end of the day, Bob, you and I both know, and I think you believe this also, someday we're going to stand on Judgment Day, you know, and Rush Limbaugh and you and I and everybody's going to have to answer for the choices we've made and the lives that we've led. And, you know, I wouldn't trade places with Rush Limbaugh for any amount of money in the world. Let's put it that way.
Nor would I. Not even the $25 million a year that he gets.
Yeah, well,
I'd buy a lot of pork and beans, though.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you're right in that regard, Jerry, but I think you're a little bit further down the road and better than me because, there are moments that, you know, there are moments that I want that literal hell filled with fire and brimstone to be very real because I'm mean because I want I want to know that George Bush, James Dobson, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, I want them to know that hell is there and waiting for them.
Yeah, well, again, as I just said, those people, I believe, and I really believe this in the bottom of my heart, they're going to have to explain lying to go to a war that slaughtered 30, 40, 50, who knows how many tens of thousands of people. And one of the points in the book I bring up, when Bush was leading up to the war, somebody asked him, "Did you consult with your father?" Meaning, you know, Bush won, which seems like a pretty reasonable idea since he had gone to war in the Middle East when he was president. And Bush basically said, "No, I didn't consult with him. He was the wrong father to consult with. I could consult with a higher father," meaning he, you know, had a personal conversation with the good Lord. And I thought, you know, for somebody to say, "I talked to God and then I went to war," Bob, help me understand this. How is that not blasphemy? I mean, I it's hard for me to think of a more blasphemous statement.
Oh, within the framework of the traditional church theological definition of blasphemy, how can it be anything but?
Exactly.
But time and again, Jerry, he's done this.
Oh, I know. He has. he has played the Jesus card, and I'm sure you share this sentiment too. I just wish people would think about what Jesus would have us do when they're supporting a guy that has lied to go to war, that has cost, you know, thousands of lives and billions of dollars. And I just don't see how they can look at him and say, this is a godly man, which is what some of my Sunday school students told me, that why they like.
Oh, I know. Your book, I got, you mailed this to me when I was still down in Alabama.
Right.
Your book was sitting on the end table in the living room as I was going through it. And we have one of those little old blue-haired ladies who taught me in the basement of the Sunday school lives right next door to us.
Uh-huh.
And she is literally 94 years old, still gets around, sharp as a tack,
works
her garden.
Yeah.
And she came over and sat down and chatted with us a little bit. And she looks there and looks at this book. And Jerry, just the title of the book and the way you've got it laid out with a flagpole coming out of the top of Jesus' head.
Yep.
You would have thought that she was that she was looking down at the Necronomicon or the satanic verses or something like that.
I know. Yeah, I'm sure I get a lot of responses like that from folks.
Well, and the thing is, and this is a question I put specifically to you, Jerry, and I do to others who sort of ruminate on this topic because it pops up a lot in the program. Can there be an outreach to the religion industry? Is it worth it? Is it possible?
Yeah. You know, there are some very, very small organizations. There's a website called Street Profits, which and I'm not much of a blogger at all. I'm kind of too busy to do that, but I do like, there's a few of these, I don't know what you want to call them, I don't really like the phrase the religious left, but it's people of faith who are going about searching for, you know, for peace and in a different way. I think there's such a backlash in so many people's minds of the religion community because of what the religious right has done, that I don't know if it's wise to try to. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's even wise to venture into that.
Well, see, Jerry, I don't. My answer that I want to be wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can reach the Southern Baptist Church.
No.
They're beyond the pale, Jerry.
Yeah, I know. I understand. And you know, it's funny because I heard from somebody a while ago who had read the book, who's a very much conservative, and he really said, I honestly agreed with a lot of what you said. But what he didn't like, and this is probably a very valid criticism, and he says, you basically think of conservatives as all, you know, sort of alike, and they're not. And I said, you know, that's true. There are degrees of, you know, to the right and to the left. But if you think about the things I'm arguing against, those are pretty traditional conservative values, you know. And the other thing that he points out, which I say, one of the first things I say in the book, is I ask God to forgive me because in the whole book I judge people, you know.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to do that, but my point is you can't write a book like this without drawing some judgments. And maybe I'm rationalizing, but I think that I'm doing more observation than judgment.
Well, you know, I think you are, and I think you're being too hard on yourself. But the fact that what it boils down to, Jerry, is I mean, if you want to speak in the mythic terms of a lot of scripture, whether it be the Bible or the Quran or the Hindu, any of that. Well, what is it? Is it in Peter where it speaks? The only time in the New Testament that the word Antichrist appears, it is referred to in the plural. There will be Antichrists.
Really? I did not realize that.
And that's the only time that word appears, and it uses it in a context that describes. To me, I read it and you know, immediately I get little mental pictures of Falwell and Dobson and Robertson, and
yeah,
they're demon possessed, Jerry.
Well, you know, M. Scott Peck wrote a book quite a few years ago now called People of the Lie, and it's not a great book or anything, but there's a part in there that's always stuck with me. And what he said, and I'll paraphrase it obviously, is that if you want to find true evil, go to church. Go to your synagogues, go to your mosques. Don't go to prison. You know, the people in prison, they're showing you exactly who they are. You know, it's the people in the three-piece suits and in the robes that are pretending to be good that aren't good. That's true evil. And that's always kind of stuck with me long before I kind of got interested in this whole topic. But I think he's absolutely right, that it's the well-dressed, well-spoken, quietly subverting the true message of the gospel into some message that is filled with, to me, a tremendous amount of hate and anger. And I don't think that's what the message that Jesus was trying to bring us. But if you listen to Falwell and Dobson and these people, boy, they just do nothing but venom. That's all they've got to offer.
Well, it is, and when you spend all your time worrying about being bigoted against whether a couple of guys can pick out a China pattern,
right?
You're not doing Christ's work on earth.
No, exactly.
You know, if it's love one another, you cannot make love one another fit. You can't make bigotry against gay people or brown people or
right. This
group or that group. You know, there were no qualifiers. As the Father has loved me, as I have loved you, love one another.
That's right. And I make that point about a half dozen times in the book. It doesn't say love the ones that think like you, love the ones that look like you. It says love one another. And that's that. I mean, it doesn't get any simpler than that. And when we start making qualifications and we start saying, yeah, but these people are like this, then we're starting to drop the script.
Yeah, and you're definitely off the reservation as far as Christian. Well, so much of this country would not be the way it is if it were Christian.
Yeah.
You know, I remember in the run-up to the war, and we're running out of time, and thank you so much for the conversation, but I remember in the run-up to the war, Jerry, Southern Baptists out there, and, you know, as a recovering Southern Baptist, I guess I focus on them, but they justified the war by saying that Jesus said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, and unto God that which is God's.
Yeah.
That's it.
I don't get the connection there.
I don't either. I remember when the ancient, you know, when the early church justified the monuments and palaces owned by popes and bishops and cardinals and the like.
Yeah.
They justified that by saying Peter owned a sword.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I was on an Alan Combs show a while ago, and somebody brought up the fact that Peter had a sword. You know, and I'm like, you know, but again, I'm sorry, but I'm going to take you back to, would Jesus be in favor of us going over and invading and killing tens of thousands of people? And if you really think he was, and I respectfully tell you to show me where you can draw that conclusion.
Well, precisely, because, you know, Jesus lived in a time when the Sicarii wandered the streets of Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, you know, this is another thing about the gay debate, because those were cross-dressers.
Yeah.
They were Jewish zealots. They dressed as women, and they slipped. They kind of, you know, prostituted themselves up to the Roman soldiers and put the shiv in their ribs.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
He had an opportunity to comment on that.
Exactly. To me, it's just so amazing when all the serious problems we have, the best that the Republican Party can offer is we got to keep you safe from homosexuals and we can't let anybody burn a flag. I don't like the idea of people burning flags. I'm an American. My family has served in wars as far back as you can remember, but is that really what we need to spend our time and energy on right now with all the things going on in the world?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But apparently that's the best they've got to offer.
Well, I tell you what, Jerry, I've really enjoyed our conversation. We do news at the top of the hour, so we kind of got a break. But I hope folks will, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, it's available all those places.
Absolutely, yeah. And just a quick plug, I've got a website, www.myjesuswasaliberal.com.
Okay, and can you order the book there?
Yeah, you can order it there, or as you said, Bob, any of the online vendors have it too, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those places.
Okay, well, I highly recommend it to everyone on our side of the debate. Jerry Wild, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance, and I wish you the absolute best. If you write another one, please let me know.
I will, Bob, and thank you. It's been fun talking with you tonight.
All right, take care.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News is next. News is right now. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
While the streets are filled with laughter. laughter and light, and the music of the season, and the merchant's windows are all bright with the faces of the children, and the families hurrying to their homes as the sky darkens and freezes. We'll be gathering around their hearts and tables, giving thanks for God's graces. And the birth of the rebel Jesus, for they're called him by the Prince of Peace, and they're called him by the Savior.
This is the Quality News Network. Stocks rallied on Wall Street today. We'll have the closing numbers for you at the end of our newscast. Seven Marines and a Navy corpsman were charged today with murder in connection with the August 26 death of a disabled Iraqi civilian. The eight accused service members are being detained at California's Camp Pendleton. If convicted, they could be put to death. Near Baghdad today, at least 85 mostly Shiite factory workers were forced into a bus and minivan by armed gunmen. 30 people, mostly women and children, were later released, but the fate of the others is unknown. Meanwhile, an insurgent group says it plans to execute four Russian embassy workers who were abducted earlier this month because Moscow has not withdrawn troops from Chechnya as requested. In Baghdad today, another of Saddam Hussein's lawyers was murdered. He's the third lawyer to be killed since the start of Saddam's trial 8 months ago. Saddam is reportedly on a hunger strike to protest the killing. In Gaza, two Palestinians were killed and 13 others wounded, including a pregnant woman and four children, in an Israeli airstrike. Officials are investigating why the missiles missed their target and instead hit a house. In Vienna, President Bush had harsh words about Iran during a one-day U.S.-EU summit. Western powers recently presented Tehran with a package of incentives to suspend its nuclear program, saying it had only weeks to respond. Mr. Bush says Iran is dragging its feet by waiting until mid-August to respond. In Washington, the U.S. is rejecting calls from North Korea for direct talks. President Bush has warned the country not to test long-range missiles and says North Korea must follow international agreements. The U.S. activated its missile defense system yesterday. On Capitol Hill, House Speaker Dennis Hastert says the House will begin new hearings in July on the immigration issue. Political analysts say that probably means immigration legislation will not pass Congress this year. American gun owners have been on a letter-writing campaign to the United Nations, convinced that the organization is plotting to take away their firearms on the 4th of July. The president of the NRA says in a web posting that a pending UN treaty would, quote, strip all citizens of all nations of their right to self-protection, end quote. The UN denies the charge. A new report says a San Andreas Fault in Southern California could produce a massive earthquake at any time and cause billions of dollars in damage. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Hollywood is producing a public service announcement aimed at discouraging suicide bombings. The 60-second spot will air on Iraqi television and include exploding cars and stuntmen, along with the message, "Don't suicide bomb." The Senate has killed a proposal to raise a federal minimum wage. The raise would have lifted it from $5.15 to $7.25 an hour by 2009. The Federal Communications Commission has approved a new plan to fund phone service subsidies. Internet telephone companies must now pay more into a fund for low-income households, which may raise rates for everyone. The FCC is also reviewing media ownership rules. They'll determine how many radio and television stations one owner can have and cross-ownership between broadcasters and newspapers. Shell Oil may soon begin paying royalties on higher energy prices, language in the original contract Shell signed in the 1990s that would have prevented payments of such royalties were inadvertently left out. In November, Californians will vote on a ballot measure that would fund alternative energy efforts through oil production taxes. The measure is led by Californians for Clean Alternative Energy and opposed by Californians Against Higher Taxes. Light sweet crude settled at $70.33 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 105 points at 11,079. NASDAQ up 34 at 2141. S&P 500 up 12 at 1252. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I really enjoyed that conversation. I hope you did as well. Jerry Wilde, Jesus was a liberal. How the conservative agenda is a rejection of Christ's teachings. And, you know, I try not to get into the book too much because I want you to read the book. He wants you to read the book. But you've got an idea of where you're going to wind up. And has Jerry Falwell, has George Bush, Pat Robertson, James Dobson, Tony Perkins, Donald Wildman, have any of these evil clowns ever read Matthew 25, 31 to 46? And the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you, a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go visit you? I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. You know, you don't have to jump out there and, oh boy, that's a function of the Holy Trinity. And you don't have to, you know, he doesn't, there's no magic in that. That's not, you know, you eat the magic cracker and it turns into Jesus meat in your belly. That's not, you drink the wine and suddenly, you know, you're blah, I'm a Christian, I'm a blood drinker, blah.
Tongue is red.
That's, no. I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. Now, you want to, I'll tell you a little secret. You want to see that at work? Don't go to church. You want to see whatever you've done to the least among the least of these, you've done it also unto me. You want to see that at work? You go to a union hall, baby. You go and watch people wipe. Where's the social justice movement? The social justice movement is in the union halls. Oh, there's some churches here and there and yada, yada, yada. But you want to see social justice at work, you go to a union hall. You want to see people lifted up and made better, you go to a union hall. You know, there's a reason that people like Flimball and Bush and all these other sleazy, scum-covered bastards of the right hate organized labor. There's a reason for it, because those people of organized labor are living the commandments of Jesus. If you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. Because, you know, there's more to it. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, ye who are accursed, and into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. And they also will answer, well, Lord, when did you see hungry or thirsty? You know, oh, my God, you know, the free market, Lord!
Jesus was a carpenter.
And he'll reply, I tell you the truth, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do it for me. Somebody needs to mail that verse to every stinking, foul, just feces-infested Republican senator who voted to make sure that nobody, that the minimum wage wouldn't rise from $5.15 an hour this year. Whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did it also unto me. But you see, that's the thing. What I need you to understand, what I need to understand, what we've got to get down to in the very core of our beings is that these people who profess Christianity and profess their piety are not Christians. And they do not believe in a judgment. And they do not believe in accountability. I don't know what happens when you die. But for the sake of Falwell, I want hell to be real. And I want George Bush to go to a burning hell so badly that I can taste it. Just turning over little eternal barbecue spit with little demons basting him with barbecue sauce for all eternity. I want that to be real. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself, sir?
Very good. Don't call me sir. Just call me Brother Bob here.
Okay, Brother Bob. Okay, Brother Bob. Brother Bob and Brother Bob. Can't get any better than that.
Yeah, exactly. Like the interview. It was very interesting.
Well, thank you. It's a very interesting book.
Yeah, I like to read it. Because it was clear that Jesus always took on the conservatives wherever he met them. You know, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, who, you know, didn't like any liberal or change or anything.
Well, he lived in a brutal society. I mean, brutal like we can scarcely imagine. Society in Baghdad is a little bit like where Jesus lived.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Right.
Yeah, people dying on the streets every day, violently or from sickness. So, you know, when he talks about sickness and death, it's not because that's not some intellectual topic for him. That's something that he saw every day.
Right. The idea of understanding Jesus, you have to understand that he went after the people, the general population did not like, which was the tax collectors. And so to understand that today, I think if Jesus came back today, he would be talking to the homosexuals or talking to people that, you know, society did not like. And you can imagine how, you know, these up and snooty conservatives would view that.
Oh, yeah, without it. Well, you know, I don't think most of the stuff I just read is in the conservative Bible. I think they've got some secret Bible that they won't let the rest of us read.
Well, I'm kind of disturbed because my church, the Anglican Church, is going through yet another discussion. They just elected a woman bishop, and there's a diocese in Texas that's freaking out about it because, you know, for some reason, women must be spiritually inferior or something.
Well, because some tent maker who had been huffing, you know, leather fumes or something, said that women need to be quiet in church.
Quiet in church, right. Yeah, I love that. It's just, if you take every single passage in the Bible that Paul wrote, because Paul was very much of a conservative. Even after he had changed, he still wrote many conservative things, and some of which I disagree with, like being veiled or having church women be quiet in churches. You have to realize, you know, the Holy Ghost did not sit there behind Paul and push his pen and have him say every single thing that he wrote in his letters, which were just simply letters.
Yeah, that's all. It's correspondence. Marcion? Put together the first canonical text, and all of Paul's letters weren't there. They weren't deemed relevant.
Right.
And frankly, how to organize a church in Asia Minor does not have a lot to do with how we live our lives in the 21st century.
Exactly, right. So, and even I think that, you know, if you look at Dobson's wife, if he has one, I'm sure she's not veiled. So they, you know, these people pick and choose what they like.
Yeah.
Then they come up with some kind of version of Christianity. But I do like some of the ideas in the Ten Commandments, because that's where, if you get down to the heart of what is good religion, you should look at the Ten Commandments. And I take the commandment, "Do not kill," pretty seriously.
Yeah, there's not a lot of equivocation in that.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't say do not kill unless George Bush says it's okay, or your government says it's okay, or if the mood strikes you, right? It says do not kill, period.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, yeah, so, I mean, I sent you a URL of about American soldiers over in Japan, because I thought it was kind of interesting, because I take a very dim view of soldiers, no matter whatever country they are, because basically they may go to church and they think, well, that doesn't apply to me now. I can, if I'm told, then I can go out and kill. It's no problem. I'm in a uniform. I can kill now.
Well, as long as I'm following orders.
Exactly, right. And whenever the American soldiers come to Japan, it's just a damn, I mean, when the carrier arrives in the port, it's a damn mess. It's a slew of rapes and molestations and crimes. I mean, for miles, it just goes on and on. And just, you know, yesterday I think we had a drunk sailor that molested a girl. If it's not molestation, it's outright rape. And it's just, it gets me sickened and disgusted as an expat because I'm embarrassed by these people.
Yeah, well, you know, you're a gaijin.
Right, right. And
you kind of have to answer for the entire nation when you walk around, Robert.
I'm telling you. I mean, when I lived in Israel, my kibbutz, I was fortunate enough to live with a Japanese roommate, and we got into a discussion about armies, and he said, well, the Japanese army is professional. And my mouth kind of dropped down because if I thought about it, it was true. I mean, when you get into the Japanese army, you do it for life, and it's like becoming the samurai. You're very, very serious about doing it, and you're doing it right, and being the utter pillar of respect and authority. And so the Japanese self-defense force, whatever you want to call them, they're pretty noble people. But when I look at the American army, it's just a mess of young little boys that like to shoot guns and kill people and get drunk and molest women.
It's not a pleasant picture.
No.
And there's a heck of a lot of truth in it, Robert.
I mean, when I lived in Germany, too, you'd see them swaggering around and downtown, hitting on every woman that they could hit on and just being obnoxious. And so most of the bars didn't allow American soldiers in there. And for good reason. Because, you know, they were just pretty much like animals.
Well, isn't there's a culture. There's a cultural thing there. I mean, I'm not talking about American culture. I'm talking about the military culture of indoctrination. You know, we talked about it a little bit last night with Lieutenant Watada when he was, you know, the desensitization to other cultures, the desensitization to potential enemies, the ingraining of a sense of some sort of, it isn't moral, but some sort of superiority.
Well, I mean, one discussion writer on the forum said, how can you expect someone to, I mean, you train them to be fighting, killing machines and to be, you know, to treat women pretty badly or have a subculture in which women are, you know, treated badly, a macho culture.
Well, some of that broke up, Robert. I thank you very much. I've got the link here that I just opened it that you sent me. U.S. sailor held for molesting high school girl in Yokosuka.
Right.
Oh, God. Oh, mercy. Well, Robert, have a wonderful, wonderful Thursday there. Look forward to hearing from you again. And please give our regards to everyone.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And, of course, you know, you're not going to get this on the evening news. Dateline Yokohama. The Kanagawa police on Wednesday arrested a petty officer, second class of the U.S. Navy, on the spot for molesting a 15-year-old high school student. Now, wait, this isn't, you know, okay, all right, you know, he's an 18-year-old sailor, you know what? No. Danny Joseph Valerie, age 47, stationed in Yokosuka, is suspected of pressing himself against the high school freshman and touching her breasts on a bench over a footbridge outside Yokosuka Chuo Station of the Keihin Electric Express Railway Company. He was reportedly drunk at the time. You know, this is difficult for me. It's difficult for you. You know, actions have consequences. And Robert is in Japan, an expatriate American. And he is seen as an embodiment of the culture from which he comes. That's got to be especially painful. The military culture in this nation is broken. Perhaps beyond repair. We thought we were going forward with something better when we came up with this idea of an all-volunteer military. And it may not have been a good idea at all. 47-year-old man groping, diddling a little high school freshman girl. Moms, dads, what would you do? What would you do? What about this little girl's parents? What can they do? My heavenly days. Let's go to the phones. Jim is joining us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Two things. The gentleman you had on, a very interesting book, and he had made a lot of very, very good points. And I enjoyed his conversation tremendously. And the second caller, the gentleman from Japan, well, you know, I think you're going to have things like this happening, and unfortunately do happen. But, you know, since he's in Japan, and I think he could point out to his fellow Japanese friends there what their army did to China back 60 years ago.
They know very well what they did.
And the A-71 bacteriological program, so... You know, I don't think they're in any position to point fingers at our military or anybody.
You know, when our military is over there, 47-year-old men groping a 15-year-old girl, I think there's plenty of room for finger pointing. Because this is now, that was then.
Well, you know, it's still there, and it still happens. And you're gonna have people who are gonna be the exception and not the rule. And I would suggest to you, in the strongest terms possible, that these are exceptions and not the rule. And you can't just put down all the men in uniform because somebody, you have a bad apple in the barrel.
Well, the problem...
I'll tell you something. I don't know what your experience with the military is, but I never knew a person who did that. And I knew some very honorable, decent people. And I'm just going to state that for the record.
Well, that's fine, but the fact that it's an exception does not make it an excuse.
Well, it's something that is to be noted, but not dined out upon either. At the expense of America's fighting people.
But, you know, the point that I'm trying to make, Jim, is that the military is a reflection of its civilian leadership.
The military, to a certain extent, is a mirror image of society as a whole. And whether that's good or whether that's bad, I don't know. But it is not a reflection of their leadership because most of their leadership do not do things like this. You have people who are just do things because they are innately bad, because they get drunk or do something stupid, or they have a flaw that, you know, somehow is not detected when they, you know, and you're going to have this in everything. I mean, look at outside of society at the people who are doing horrible things, much worse than this. I mean, just because this guy's in uniform, there's no reason to pillory the entire military or dine out upon it.
Well, I don't think I'm pillorying anyone, but Robert is in a position to see this on a regular basis, and what he is describing is not exceptional. It is de rigueur. He said so.
I don't think
he said the behavior.
I don't think that's the correct term to describe that type of behavior.
Well, he said that the behavior of the American military personnel when the carrier comes into the port is atrocious.
Well, then that needs to be addressed through the highest levels of command, to as far as whatever happened to shore patrol.
And,
I don't know. I mean, I'm not there, and some people, I think, have just an axe to grind with people who are in uniform.
Well, I don't think that's the case in Robert's instance.
Well, I don't know. I don't know, Zan. And I just heard what I heard. And I did agree with what he said about what's happening in his church, which is Anglican. And then he mentioned this thing about this incident with the 47-year-old doing whatever he did. And I don't even want to get into that. But nonetheless, you do have bad apples in the barrel, true, but it does not reflect upon the whole of the people who serve honorably and with distinction.
Well, I understand your point, Jim, but what I'm trying to put forward is that there is if you put a good apple in a barrel that has rot in it, that apple will begin to rot.
Well,
sometimes it's the barrel and not the apple.
The policy is they get rid of the bad apple pretty quickly. And I'm sure that bad apple is gone. In by now, I'm sure they've taken care of that with the military authorities that govern him's chain of command.
But what I guess the inquiry I'm trying to make, Jim, is when you have a situation, okay, this thing in Japan, you have people charged with murder today in the American military, and they shot an innocent civilian and then tried to dig a hole to make it look like he was he was trying to plant a bomb, and then they lied about it. It was murder. Okay.
Well, of course, all war is murder, Bob.
I'm talking about cold-blooded civilian murder.
Well, you're going to have that. Unfortunately, that's just part of the game.
And see, we're over there. We went over there, Jim. They didn't come over here. They didn't start
that.
It with us.
I understand that, and I'm not speaking for the leadership, nor am I defending the people who sent them there. I am simply trying to, I guess, be an advocate for those people who are there. And I don't excuse behavior like that. No. And these people who are been found out as being guilty of this are going to be brought up on murder charges and will probably face a firing squad.
Well, no, we will not send anyone who has served in Iraq to a firing squad.
I guarantee you they just might because of something like this. I mean, I hope they do. But I'm saying that you've got young men and young women who have signed up, and then they go to this place. It's a hellish place. It's a different environment, and they don't know one thing from the other. And
and they don't know who their enemy is and who their friend is, or if
exactly.
They have any friends.
And I find it difficult to judge them in many cases, particularly the good ones, with any degree of harshness unless I walk a mile in their shoes or in their boots. And that's all I'm saying.
Well, I understand your point, but I believe we have to begin an inquiry, Jim, into whether or not we have fundamental flaws in the military structure in this country. Look at
return to the draft. I don't think that's going to help any.
Well, look at the top brass. I mean, you remember the little revolt against Rumsfeld a month ago or so?
The revolt happened after they got out of the service because
exactly.
They could not say anything against him because under UCMJ they could be prosecuted and put in jail for a year.
They could have resigned their commissions. They did not have, if it was wrong when, if they had misgivings and they were, and it was wrong when it was
Would
being
you
run
throw
up.
Throw away your whole career and your pension.
They wouldn't throw away,
like
they wouldn't throw away a pension. They just retire. Boom, gone, done, thanks, it was fun.
I don't know what type of action would have been taken against them. If they had said something to him while in uniform, or if they had resigned early like that, I mean, you don't know. I don't know. I would have to examine it on a case-by-case basis. My problem is the fact with the leadership is they did not listen to General Shinseki a couple of years ago when he told them that what they were doing was folly. That's where I find the major fault right there.
Well, exactly, and these are institutional failings.
I will go to the wall for him and what he did. He had the courage to do that, You saw what happened to him.
They cashiered him, but I don't think he's out there on a bread line anywhere, Jim.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what his situation is, but I know that, you know, when you're retired like that, it isn't good for your career, and it's not good for the end of what it's just... It's something that these people take very seriously, and they don't want to have their career ruined. And I can understand their position. And I'll be honest with you, I would probably have done the same thing they did. I'm not going to be dishonest with you about it, because I know how it is to be in a chain of command situation. And, you know, the military is, number one, it's not a democracy. It only protects democracy, supposedly, but it does not practice it.
Well, and that's very interesting, because historically it has democratic roots, and those were abandoned.
Well, I'm sorry, but the military is not a democracy, nor can it be.
Well, but, I mean, you do realize that the officer corps was at one point elected.
Well, that isn't the case anymore. That's gone.
Right. Those were democratic principles that were abandoned.
Being elected was in the Bolshevik army, and they abandoned that practice very quickly because it didn't work. And the soldiers, officers, didn't wear epaulets. And they sure restored them, because they realized they had to have discipline and they had to have structure. You can't have an army of officers that are elected. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of in my life.
Well, an army with elected officers preserved this republic, Jim, in the Civil War. But that's neither here nor there. We got to roll on. Thanks for your thoughts. I do appreciate them.
I beg to differ with you there.
Well, you can then differ with history. We got to roll.
No,
take care.
So.
You'll recall that one of the greatest or most decorated members of the officer corps of the Union Army in the Civil War went on to become governor of Maine, led the repulse at Little Round Top. Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain was elected. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
Federal class action lawsuits are being filed against hospitals in Chicago, San Antonio, Albany, and Memphis, alleging an illegal conspiracy to suppress nurse wages. SEIU's Andy Stern says this conspiracy is part of an overall degradation in working conditions that's bad for nurses and for patients.
Who pays for all of this illegality and conspiracy? Well, we all do. Nurses pay for it in terms of short staffing and inadequate wages, and patients pay for it through decreased time with RN and a greater risk of complications.
Lisa Reed is a Chicago RN and a plaintiff in this case.
In my 15 years, I have seen more and more nurses leaving the bedside. We've watched corporations take over our hospitals and start running them like businesses. Something must be done to improve our working conditions and keep nurses in the profession. That's why I decided to be a plaintiff in this historic lawsuit. For our patients and our professional nurses, we must hold corporations like Advocate accountable for their upside-down priorities.
Using the federal antitrust laws, the suits allege that for years, these hospitals have secretly and systematically exchanged information on what they pay nurses in order to suppress nurse wages. The goal of the lawsuits is to get the extra compensation the nurses deserve.
Negotiations are set to resume between two New York City Hilton-owned hotels and the union representing staff. The Waldorf Astoria and the New York Hilton have yet to come to an agreement with Unite Here, the union representing staff at the two hotels. An agreement was reached with the New York Hotel and Motel Trades Council and the Hotel Association of New York City over a six-year contract set to take hold on July 1, 2006, covering more than 100 other hotels in New York City. The agreement with the council is expected to be overwhelmingly ratified by union members. It includes wage increases of 4% for the first 3 years and an additional 3.5% each for the remaining 3 years. Pension contributions will also increase by 2%, and medical benefits will remain as is. Hilton representatives wish to return to bargaining today to discuss remaining concerns over economic and non-economic issues. Temp workers in San Mateo County, California now qualify for limited benefits. The workers, organized by the SEIU and AFSCME last year, will now receive holiday pay, medical benefits, and raises under a contract approved on Tuesday.
Here's today's economic report. From 1830 through 1970, real wages for workers rose every decade, but real wages are not rising now. Measured in constant 1982 dollars, the U.S. Department of Labor says weekly wages were $302.52 in 1964. In 2004, wages were lower, down to $277.57. Labor Research Associates says the Bureau of Labor Statistics reveals another drop in real wages over the past year. These stagnant and falling wages are lowering the living standards of U.S. workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back. 23 minutes before the hour, halfway through tonight's prayer meeting edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I told you the story last night about me applying for the appointment to the Naval Academy. And, you know, I've toyed with it from time to time, other times in my life as well. But, you know, eventually I come down to the point, you know, this place where I can't. Not a lack of honor. It's not a lack of dedication. It's not a lack of courage. It's a lack of willingness to kill anyone for any reason having to do with anything save the immediate safety of my loved ones. You know, I had to run an errand before the program started, and I heard an interview with the mother of one of these soldiers who's been arrested for the murder in Iraq. And she said, you know, people need to know the true story about him. He's not a killer, ma'am. He wasn't when he left your home. He is now. Because he was only following orders. I mean, do you realize that the odds are, what's his name, Grainer, Charles Grainer, the so-called ringleader of the Abu Ghraib the nightmare? You realize that guy stands a chance of doing less time in prison for what he did to those Iraqis than First Lieutenant Aaron Watada does for refusing to participate in an unjust, illegal, immoral, unconstitutional, filthy, soul-eating war? Now look at that possibility and tell me that the military structure is not cracked nigh unto breaking. Because it is. And the analogy I used in the conversation with Jim a few minutes ago, when a barrel has rot in it and you put apples in it, the apples will rot because of the barrel. The barrel, in this case, is rotten. And, you know, this isn't me. This is not, you know, non-expert Bob. These are words that have come out from the so-called leadership. These are the old blood and guts types like Jack Murtha, who's looked at the high brass and said, "Don't be expecting any new Humvees. We can't get them for you. We're broke." And has had conversations with the military leadership of the various states' National Guards, who say, "Look, you know, it's broke. Look at Katrina. Where was the National Guard? Well, all of the high water craft of the Louisiana National Guard, for some reason or another, was in the middle of a desert." I'm not making that up. It happened at the time. So, you know, I mean, that's just where we are. I tell you what, let's go back to the phones. Bob is joining us from North Dakota. Haven't heard from Bob in a while. Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm breathing.
Well, you know, breathe out, breathe in, and every day above the ground's a good one.
Is that not the truth? You know, every day above the ground is a good one, but we have more important things to speak about than my health, right? We got a lot more important things. And, you know, Bob, one of my last duties serving in the United States Marine Corps, I worked for the Provost Marshal's office at Camp Pendleton, California. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, my job there was, I was in charge of the administration office at Camp Pendleton. And one of the things the admin office did there, we took care of, you know, kind of the classified verbs come in, stuff like that, but we also dealt with all of the criminal charges against those Marines back in that day. Okay? And there were, oh my God, some of the things that happened were so obscene that this gentleman that says that all military servicemen are honorable, that all men that serve in uniform have to be saluted or respected or stood up and, you know, kind of run them up the damn flag and everybody salute them because they served in a damn uniform. You know,
kind of gives me a new level of respect for the good humor man.
Yeah, well, let's
sorry, I was being a smart ass. I apologize.
You're telling me the truth because the good humor man, you said the good humor man, and I remember when I was just a young MC scraping up a young little boy that fell under the good humor truck and got his head run over. And I've seen some ugly things in my day, Bob.
I don't doubt it.
And, you know, I try to put them away and forget about them. But this administration and these people that keep flouting this flag thing and, you know, wrap everything up in patriotism have no idea of anything military at all. They've never been in combat. Most of them just talk a bunch of stuff. And they have no idea. All they do is talk, but they don't listen. Okay?
Okay.
They do not hear what veterans have to say. They don't want to hear it because it might interfere with their religion. It might interfere with their respect of the flag. It might interfere with their ideas about themselves because they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear what I have to say. They have their own opinion, and they just keep flouting opinion. This is what I know. Well, how about listen to somebody that's been there? How about starting to listen to these young men coming back from Iraq that are not totally messed up, okay? Not like me, because I know I'm messed up. I really do. I know I'm messed up. I cannot articulate very well. I just tell it from the middle of me, right there in my gut.
Well, look, Bob, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
I'm trying to make a point. I don't know if it's getting out there about this rotten barrel.
No, that's That's absolutely the truth. The barrel is rotten. This nation, if you want to call this a nation anymore, because it's not acting like a nation. It's not acting like patriots. They're acting like individuals trying to save their own bacon. They don't care about the United States. They care about, their own locale or their own little piece of the planet, and they want to preserve it. Over all things, theirs is the most important. Well, how about this? Just for a moment. Step off the planet. You know, put yourself on the moon. Look down like Neil Armstrong did. And just look at this whole Earth. Okay?
Yeah.
And realize that you don't have any place to go. That's what they realized standing on the moon. They looked off into the universe. Where are we going to go? When you destroy the nest you live in, where are you going to go? I don't care if you're military, civilian, or, some neocon configuration of I'm greater than thou art. I don't care. Just step off the planet, take a good look back at it, and say, okay, where would I rather be?
Well, yeah, the long view changes everything, Bob.
Hmm?
The long view changes everything.
Yeah, step outside of yourself for a change.
I mean, as you can do it as a nation, you can do it as an individual. I mean, I've done it a million times with our kids. You know, some little kid on the bus will call him an ugly name, and when you got little kids, you got to look at them and say, look, it hurts right now, but you're going to be, God willing, on this earth for 70, 80 years, and you will forget this. It does not matter. You take the long view, and everything changes.
Step off the planet. Please, everyone, just, I don't know if they can hear me or if they care what I have to say. Step outside yourself and look at that poor, innocent child in Iraq and become that child. Don't think about, good gracious, I'm going to soil the United States military. I would, there are times I've met guys in the military and I have handcuffed them and I have placed them on these aeroplanes and these other conveyances to take them to a place called Leavenworth and Portsmouth, I used to call it, because we used to take them there and say, boy, you ain't going to like it when you get here. And there was a few times that I took them to the only red line break left in the United States of America at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, which was the only red line brig, and if Jim knows...
What is a red line brig, Bob? Please explain.
Red line brig is, if you step off the red line, I'm going to blow you away with this shotgun. That's it. If you step over the red line, if you cross this red line, I'll kill you with this shotgun. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's what they did at Guantanamo Bay. It was the only red line brig left within CONUS. That was the continental United States, but it was outside the continental United States, and we could kill them if they stepped outside the red line because they were the criminal of criminals. And that's why they chose it, to use it for their purposes, because they knew that was a killing place, and it was a killing place back in my day. Okay?
Yeah.
Step outside that red line, boy, I'll blow you in half. And the guards there were trained special. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Step over the... No, it's just a red painted line.
Yeah, line on the concrete or whatever.
Right. You step off that, you step either side. You know, it doesn't matter. You got a concourse. You got two red lines. You step over that red line, and that man over there with that shotgun will cut you in half. And that was a fact back then. It was the only red line break left in the United States that we controlled, And the only reason that we left it a red line brick is because it was outside of Connaught.
Yeah.
In my day. And these people have no idea about breaks. They have no idea about prisons. They have no idea, but they bloviate. I'm tired of bloviating.
Okay, let's talk about this guy in Japan that I mentioned for a minute, Bob. He's been turned over to the local authorities.
Yes, he should be. He committed a crime in another country.
Now, is that because we have a standing agreement with that country? I mean, if for instance, the American soldiers who committed these murders, allegedly, in Iraq, are convicted. Is Iraq a free country, Bob? Can they ask that these soldiers who committed allegedly these murders to be turned over to them for trial and punishment? Would we ever let that happen?
They should be able to, because Japan is a sovereign nation. Okay? We occupied them for how long? How many months? And then it was, you know, we had bases there, but yes, they were a sovereign nation. And Germany, after it capitulated, gave up, it was a sovereign nation. But yet, after 50, 60 years, we still have bases there. We still operate out of their territory. They allow it because we have the big gun. And they know we do, and they allow us to use their territory. But it's getting smaller and smaller. More people in this world are starting to wake up. And few people of my age. And, Bob, you weren't. And I thank God you weren't. I'm glad that you were smart enough. And, what's that thing Stuart Smalley says, you know?
And gosh darn it, people like me.
And, yeah, people do like you, Bob, but they like you because of your intelligence and your ability to articulate the truth. And sometimes, yes, you rub people the wrong way. And then you see what other people are doing, and you jump in their case. And that's beautiful. I love that. I really do. Because you see them manipulating you, okay? And when they try to play you, play you off against you, you know, that's what a manipulator does. He tries to get inside of your knowledge and twist it in a way that you're going to agree with him. Bob, don't agree with him. You know where you're going.
Well, I don't want to condemn anyone as a whole, Bob. But we have a military that was ordered to Iraq, and it did, you know, it followed orders, and we've got Iraq, and
yeah,
something was wrong with the top brass.
I listened to a young lieutenant that's listening to his conscience. He's listening to his oath of office. Okay. Something that enlisted men don't take. We take an oath, but it's an oath of allegiance, and enlisted men, we swear allegiance to the Constitution of the United States. That's the first thing that comes up in the oath of, you know, when we swear an oath, we raise our right hand and we swear to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. It says both foreign and domestic. It doesn't say, I swear to uphold the Constitution.
Yeah, and one of the things I don't know, Bob, is how old is that oath?
Well,
that would mean something to me to know that, because at what point, you know, against all enemies, foreign and domestic, at what point does a soldier look up and realize that that this country is in the thralls of a domestic enemy?
Yeah, when is that, Bob? Well, I don't know. What show did you have that lieutenant on your show?
Yeah, last night.
Oh, yes. That was where I heard it. And I thought, there is a man that I would be proud to serve with and to serve under, and I would follow that man. So good God, he's just a baby to me, but I would follow him into the right face into the gun of this neocon fascist dictatorial government that's trying to destroy this country.
Well, see, on the one hand, I feel kind of bad with Lieutenant Watada's case, Bob, because I have a feeling if he deployed to Iraq, he would do everything in his power and quite possibly succeed in bringing everybody home.
Yes, he would. He would try to give all of his men a fighting chance. But Bob, you got to realize that he has said that no, this is an illegal, immoral, unjust war, and I will not lead men in this war, and therefore I will face court-martial, and I will fight for what is for my office, for the office that I have been sworn to uphold. And, you know, he's got more, Bob, that young man, oh, my.
What he's doing takes guts, the real kind, Bob.
Well, it takes the kind that men, lieutenants, gave their lives for them. And medals of honor were given to them in the South Pacific, and in Normandy, and all through the European theater. These were men that led their men with courage, not the ones that lead with self-interest. These people that think that they are the centers of the earth, centers of the universe, the centers of everything. It's all about me, Bob. No, it's not about me. It's about us. It's not about you as a me, because that's what I love about you. It's not you, Bob. It never was Bob Kincaid. You know what was the Kincaid tribe? Yeah, that's very, very, very important to you. But there's something else. You keep speaking of it. You speak about this strange piece of the planet, and it's like these mountain removal things, and you speak about the miners as if when one or five or 10 or 12 die underground, as if you had lost a part of yourself. See, that's what I love about Bob Kincaid, is that as one of us diminishes. All of us diminish.
Well, Bob, I'm not, you know, it's not a game to me. I feel
no,
it.
It's not, Bob. It's not. I knew that the first time I heard your voice. But I want to say something to the listening audience.
Okay, do it kind of quick because we're running out of time, all right?
God, I always burn you up, don't I?
Well, you know, we got this news. That, you know, we try to get them to wait for us, but, you know, they just won't.
It's not about old Gunny Bob. And it's not about whether you served in the DOD or whether you kissed up to the, you know, to the powers that be. It's about us, the United States, and the people that reside here. And it's about the world that you live in and the people that reside there. How do you want to be remembered in history as the shining city on the hill? Or that evil empire, what is that they call us? The Great Satan?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Great Satan. Do you want to be the Great Satan? Well, then go ahead and be the Great Satan. Take us all with you into your hell. Or stand and be that shining beacon, that beautiful thing, that thing that every human on the planet can aspire to be. Or just go and go to hell with, what is that, Dobson, Falwell, and the rest of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, you have a wonderful weekend, or night.
We're not there yet, man.
I know you hate weekends, but hey, I want you to have one, because I really do. I want you to just forget about it, and then realize that every time you get up and you speak the truth, and sometimes somebody will come at you and they'll tell you, hey, you got to do it this way. Well, don't worry about it, Bob. You're doing it the right way. You always have done it the right way. And that's why I just cannot help but tune in. There's times I just, hey, I've had enough of this. I want to quit it. I want to go somewhere else.
Hey, I feel the same thing. It happens to me too, Bob.
I want to listen to Peter B. or something, but I can't. You got me hooked, boy. Hey, you are my OxyContin.
Just don't chew it up for the refreshing burst of flavor, okay, Bob?
Yeah, I never did that. I always wait till the last or get in there. It's time. All right, put the music on. I'm out of here. Tell Agnes I love her. And, have some of that friendship bread.
All right.
The Amish are good people.
Yes, they are. Bob, we got to roll. You have a great evening, and give our best to Glenda, please.
Well, she knows you love her, and I love you, and she loves you. And hey, goodness gracious, everybody knows I love Agnes.
That's true. Bob, take care. Have a wonderful night.
Kiss
bye now.
Baby. Bye-bye.
Will do. News time. You want to jump in on this? 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4 head on. What you're listening to is America's other liberal network, the Head On Radio Network. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Stocks rallied on Wall Street today. We'll have the closing numbers for you at the end of our newscast. 7 Marines and a Navy corpsman were charged today with murder in connection with the August 26 death of a disabled Iraqi civilian. The 8 men could face the death penalty if convicted. In Vienna, President Bush had harsh words about Iran during a one-day U.S.-EU summit. Western powers recently presented Tehran with a package of incentives to suspend its nuclear program, saying it had only weeks to respond. Mr. Bush says Iran is dragging its feet by waiting until mid-August to respond. At the summit, European nations supported President Bush's handling of the situations in Iran and North Korea. Still, many are challenging the U.S. on other issues, including the war in Iraq and the prison at Guantanamo Bay. In Baghdad, former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein is on another hunger strike. That's in protest to the news today that another lawyer who was representing him in his war crimes trial has been murdered. Since the trial began 8 months ago, 2 other lawyers have been killed. On Capitol Hill, Senate Democrats are divided on when to withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq. 2 proposals are on the table, both of them non-binding, with different timelines. Meanwhile, Republicans call both plans cut-and-run strategies. In Washington, the U.S. is rejecting calls from North Korea for direct talks. President Bush has warned the country not to test long-range missiles and says it must follow international agreements. On Capitol Hill, House Speaker Dennis Hastert says the House will begin new hearings in July on the immigration issue. Political analysts say that probably means immigration legislation will not pass Congress this year. Also on Capitol Hill, House Republicans are postponing the renewal of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. They say it unfairly singles out southern states for closer federal scrutiny. American gun owners have been on a letter-writing campaign to the United Nations, convinced that the organization is plotting to take away their firearms on the 4th of July. The NRA says a pending UN treaty would, quote, strip all citizens of all nations of their right to self-protection, end quote. The UN denies the charge. The AARP says the prices of the most widely used prescription drugs jumped in the first quarter, just as a new Medicare drug coverage program began. The group says prices jumped 3.9%. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Hollywood is producing a public service announcement aimed at discouraging suicide bombings. The 60-second spot will air on Iraqi television and include exploding cars and stuntmen, along with the message, "Don't suicide bomb." The Senate has killed a proposal pushed by Democrats to raise a federal minimum wage. The raise would have lifted it from $5.15 to $7.25 an hour by 2009. A Ford Motor executive says the company will be making a profit again by 2008. His comments came as Ford showcased changes to the company's vehicles for the new model year. People who use cell phones or internet-based phones could soon be faced with higher bills. Wireless and internet phone companies have been ordered to pay more into a fund for low-income households, meaning that costs could be passed on to consumers. The FCC is reviewing media ownership rules. They'll determine how many radio and television stations one owner can have and address concerns about cross-ownership among broadcasters and newspapers. Oil companies may soon begin paying royalties on higher energy prices. The government accidentally left out language in the original contracts that would have forced royalty payments when prices reached a certain amount. In November, Californians will vote on a ballot measure that would fund alternative energy efforts through oil production taxes. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 105 points, NASDAQ up 34, S&P 500 up 12. There's more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Almost 7.5 minutes after the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. Oh, Hosanna. Brother Bob's Cathedral of Common Sense. Hope you're enjoying yourself. I certainly am enjoying sharing my time with you. An email from our other good friend in Japan, Lonnie. The noise in the background is my kids. It's not that soundproof here yet. Lonnie writes, Bob, I too, talking about military abuses in foreign countries by our military. Bob, I too see this on a regular basis in Japan. I've been here with my family for 22 years, rapes and molestations throughout the islands. Japan is still an occupied country by choice, so the economy and society could benefit. 50% of USA taxes go to military, not society, infrastructure, and so forth. He says, I'm a Vietnam vet. I witnessed atrocities there, too, daily. They occur when a trained soldier does not have a clear or doable mission. Troops become tight family units. It's a frustration that explodes when something happens to one of them. Vietnam was a civil war. Iraq is a civil war. We are the occupier. There are barrels of bad apples in the USA military led by some of the sorriest apples ever to have risen to the top. Sorry for the rant, he says. No, Lonnie, don't apologize. I appreciate it. We appreciate it. And, you know, I'm revolted at the idea of a draft. Because the only draft that I have an understanding or a comprehension of is the one that took place in support of the Vietnam War. And that wasn't a true draft. That was conscription of the poor. I'd like, you know, It could be that this all-volunteer military is a failure from the top down. It could be that that when you talk about honor and duty, that it's the man, it's the woman who is called to active service and goes and serves honorably. Under that circumstance, who puts aside wealth or poverty, who puts aside... But you see, we've got that list. I ran across it first listening to Mike Malloy, the 14 defining characteristics of fascism. Do you remember that? And one of those 14 points is an undue emphasis on the military. And you see it every day. The woman I heard interviewed whose son has been charged with murder. My God, one of those charged was a Navy corpsman. A medic, in common parlance. A guy trained to treat wounds and save lives. And he's been charged in this murder? A healer? Boggles the mind. So, you know, I know a lot of people who have served admirably and served honorably. And I won't paint with a broad brush. But if you take an otherwise decent human being and put them into a broken system, then the negative effects will rub off. This one soldier's mother said, you know, he's not a killer. Okay, well, Mom, I understand that. She said, you know, I'm opposed to the war, but they're over there protecting our freedom. And there's just some places where my BS detector goes off and you got to stop and say no. Say what you will of the mission in Iraq, whatever that mission is, but it is not about our freedom. When our freedom goes out the window in things like NSA spying programs at home, you cannot argue that the troops in Iraq are fighting for our freedom. Now, that may be the happy horse crap that they're told to make the poison go down behind the pudding a little easier on the spoon. But I've heard that on, and I won't countenance it. When I hear, oh, they're fighting for our freedom, hooey, crap, bug spray. Most of them are fighting to say, you know, and one of the first times that this light kind of went on for me was when a family friend of ours went over and came back on leave. And a little old lady looked at him and said, you know, we're so proud of what you're doing to serve your country. And he said, lady, I'm not serving my country. I'm trying to keep my ass alive. And this is a most decent guy. He's a friend. I mean, it's not an acquaintance in the family. This is someone I consider a personal friend. And would not, you know, wouldn't lie to me or anybody if his life depended on it. Truly honorable. And so, when I heard that phrase from that poor mother, and, you know, my God, what must her, you know, it's like Bob was talking about a few minutes ago, you know, you step back and you take the long view, you take the view from the moon, what hell must her life be? Spent 18, 19 years of her life trying to get a baby that grew in her womb to adulthood. He goes against her wishes, joins the military, all gung-ho, goes to Iraq. He's there for 6-7 months. And he's in a brig and he's charged with murder and he could face the death penalty. That's what the 18 years of your life was for? That's what smacking the little hand, no, honey, don't touch the hot stove. Burn the baby. That's what the tears, when somebody said something rotten to him on the bus and he came in tears and you hug him and you hold him and you pat his little head and you tell him, it'll all be better. It's okay. Words can't hurt you. That's what it's for? So I understand when she's sitting there being interviewed by National People's Radio and I hear her say, well, they're over there defending our freedom so we can have this conversation right now. Daggummit, she's got to say something. She's got to have something to justify her existence right now. She's got to have something that makes it okay for her to get up the next morning and breathe out and breathe in again and not just... I ache. How many thousands of times has this happened in our country? How many mothers, how many fathers, because that pig-eyed, jug-eared, nasty little lout in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue said, I've lost my patience with Saddam Hussein. How many times has this tragedy been repeated across the country? Rocky Mountain News had a huge story, page after page after page, about this one Marine whose job is to go and tell people that their kid is dead. How many times does it have to happen before we finally look up and go, enough? I know, I did this last night and I apologize. But it makes my head hurt. The daggum minimum wage debate in the Senate today. They brought in, at some point in time, some multimillionaire who runs the U.S. Chamber of Commerce wrote a letter to the senators saying, dear members of the Senate, the United States economy will fully collapse if you give some poor schlub $5.50 an hour. Jesus, I hate him. And Bill Frist, who has enough money to burn a herd of sopping wet elephants, puts a poison pill on Senator Kennedy's amendment to make sure that the minimum wage can't go up. Bill Frist, whose family has millions of dollars from running abortion mills inside its hospital complexes, says that some guy working for $5.15 an hour can't make $5.75. Screw him to the wall! Broken, 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 broken. I am tired of casting my gaze about this once great nation and seeing nothing but broken. When is it going to be fixed? When are the multi-bajillionaires going to be happy with enough tax cuts? If we just say, look, guys, you don't have to pay taxes anymore at all. Can we stop with the nonsense and stop with the damn flag-burning amendments and stop with the immigration debate and stop with the gay marriage debate and start fixing the crap that's broken? Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. There is stuff that is badly wrong in this country. You want a list? You know the list. I start on the list, I'm going to wind up sounding like an auctioneer. The military's broken. The economy is broken. The wage system is broken. The healthcare system is broken. The transportation system is broken. Port security, the big container ships, and broken. Cities, towns, counties, broken. Natural disaster preparedness, broken. The faith community, broken.
Well, you see, that's the problem with those liberals. That's why a liberal network will never take off, because they're so negative. It's all sunshine and daisies in America. Don't they know that? No, I don't. We are working as hard and fast as we possibly can to create a nation that if my children reproduce, that my grandkids can't live in. Broken, broken, broken. When do we fix it? Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program. Sorry
hey,
for the rant,
Bob,
man.
How you doing?
I'm all right, I think.
Well, you are all right, man. You ought to be mad. People got to be mad. I'm so mad right now, it's time to start punching people in the mouth.
Yeah.
Senator Kennedy should have walked across the damn aisle and punched Frist right in the damn mouth.
Yeah, I'm wanting to bring back the dueling.
Well, exactly. I mean, who the hell are you, these? I've had it with these people. And
$5.
It's time to get pissed off, and it's time to start punching people in the mouth. They're turning around. They're going to turn this whole campaign into, you know, them liberals are just a bunch of weenies. They want us to get out.
They
want to
cut and run.
Da 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 da. That there's some idiot congressman from Pennsylvania today that has discovered that we did discover weapons and mass destruction in Iraq.
Oh, they're doing that again.
That one?
No, but I'm not. Why am I not surprised?
Missiles with sarin gas and and you know who's holding back and who won't disclose it?
The liberal media.
No, the Bush administration.
Oh.
Now, go figure that one.
Nope, ain't got enough
go
liquor.
Go figure that one. These people, you know, and this talk, right-wing talk radio, I mean, these what Rush Limbaugh said about liberals, that liberals are happy that these guys got killed, that these two guys were kidnapped and tortured.
Yeah, it's not just that freak. I heard the same thing from some right-wing media research center goon.
Hear it from all of you. You'll hear it from Michael Savage. You'll hear it from every damn one of them. That's the mantra of the day, or the week, or whatever it is. We better wise up. I'll tell you, it's time. You know, this playing nice and yeah. I'm extremely upset about this whole stuff, man. And like I said, it's time to start calling them for what they are. And people that follow these people, then they need to be punched in the mouth too.
Yeah, that'll
wake their ass up.
I mean, Wayne, I'm almost speechless. The House of Representatives gave itself what, $32,000 extra dollars last week? And some dude who changes the oil in your car every 3,000 miles can't get 7 1/4 an hour? Jiminy.
Listen, they've got their right wing so fired up. You know, some guy wrote a letter into the paper the other day in, well, West Virginia, okay? The Democrats are against working people because they won't vote to reduce the gas tax in West Virginia by 5 cents. But the West Virginia legislature this year passed a minimum wage law to raise the minimum wage in West Virginia to $7.50 an hour. There were 10 people that voted against that out of the 100-member House. Guess what all those 10 members were?
They're squealing all the way. Republicans, sure.
They're all Republicans, every one of them. So this guy, say the average West Virginia spends or buys 100 gallons of gas a week, which is probably double or triple what they are. What's that come out to? $5?
Yeah.
You know.
This is real swallow a mountain, gag on a gnat material.
Right. And this guy's saying that Democrats don't care about people that make $6 an hour.
Well,
guess what, creep? If you got a raise to $7.50 an hour, that would be what? Let me see. 40 times 2. That would be $60 a week.
80.
Would you? Wait a minute. No, we're only going a buck and a half.
Oh, a buck and a half. Sorry. My bad.
Six.
I ought to know better. I can't do math on the fly.
No, I ciphered for 3 hours before I made that.
doing your gazettas and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I thought my 60 was right. You said 80. I went, and I start questioning.
No, but
I mean, you know, what would you rather have, $60 or $5?
No, I'll take the 60.
Yeah, okay. I bet even these right-wing creeps would.
Yeah. And but you know, it's not, but it's not just that. You know, I'm out and about. I'm driving around today, Wayne, and I hear one of John Racy's Senate commercials. And you know, I've got issues with Senator Byrd.
I mean, as do I.
But I want that old Byrd back in the Senate.
I will vote for Robert Byrd now.
I did my protest thing with the primary, and I'm lettering him hard and explaining the facts of life to him. But you know, to hear, and John Racy's running these. Have you heard these things yet, Wayne?
I don't know. I guess not.
It's 45 seconds of I worship the military, followed by 15 seconds of, of course, Senator Byrd is the son of Satan because he didn't vote to support the troops.
When didn't he do that?
You know, this is some omnibus budget bill that maybe he cast a no vote or wasn't there. He was on his medication. God knows what. But, you know, as usual, the damn Republicans turn that into, oh, Jesus, he hates the military.
Well, I'm telling you, the Democrats got to straighten up with, well, they got to get mad. And they got to straighten out their leadership. Well, because I'm going to do that here. I'm not going to put up with any of that junk anymore. You know, the moderate, the get-along, the, you know, centralist, you know. Liberal is not a bad word. And, you know, and it's that we have to change that. And we have to change the way these people think. And we have to challenge them. And, you know, by punching them in the mouth, that's exactly what I mean, is that we have to challenge them. We can't constantly let them get away with this junk. You know, they're trying to turn Murtha, John Murtha, into some oak. Unbelievable. They're unbelievable.
Well, I know.
Rush Limbaugh should be taken off the air for the statements that he makes.
Yeah. But, of course, he's getting $25 million a year for the statements that he makes.
And he's a drug addict.
Yeah, I know. You know, I'm doing.
Addict. He's no better than a junkie in the street, except he's got the money to pay for it.
He's got the money, and he can send the maid. You know, one of these nights you're gonna. I gotta warn you. One of these nights you're gonna tune in, and you're gonna hear what sounds like a right wing radio show. I'm gonna see if I can do right wing radio. And Agnes,
can I get, you know, an advance notice on that?
Yeah, I'll try to drop you an email.
Medicine or stuff, Bob.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, but the thing is, anybody can do it. It's shtick. It's bogus.
But well, listen, if you listen to it, whatever they do, they turn around and accuse us of doing that. That I mean, as evil, you know. Now they found out that Murtha has directed contracts to his brother.
Oh, yeah, that was...
which makes him far worse than Duke Cunningham.
No.
I mean, you know, Cunningham was just a nice
Well,
guy.
He directs contracts to his brother and eats babies for lunch.
Right.
You know, it's just going to get uglier and uglier. I mean, that, you know, people say, why pay attention to somebody like Anthrax Coulter? I don't pay attention, but you know what? You can get an idea where the debate is going.
That's exactly where it's going.
When I heard her say that John Murtha is the reason that soldiers invented fragging in Vietnam,
right.
I knew what was coming down the pike. The Swift, you know, somebody has pulled the ripcord on the little Evan Rude at the back of the Swift boat, and here it comes.
Well, I'll tell you, Jethro's right. It's madness. It's pure madness.
Yeah.
And, you know, well.
And we, you know.
Seeing that this is prayer meeting night, I pray people wake up because.
The country is broken.
We are broken.
I mean, I got a story in the stack here that I haven't gotten to that, you know, and again, it's the little things, Wayne. The Indiana Supreme Court, by a vote of 4-0. Now, this is just Indiana. Today allowed the Indiana legislature to sell its turnpike to a private entity.
That's coming to West Virginia. I'll guarantee you that's coming to West Virginia.
You're darn right.
Russ Weeks will be all for that one.
Yeah.
You know, get rid of them windmills and sell the turnpike.
Jiminy. But, I mean, do you see why that kind of made the little bells and lights and whistles and stuff go off when I read it?
Yeah, I do.
That's privatization.
Who's been,
see,
who's been severely under attack in the state here recently? Our Turnpike Authority?
Oh, a little bit, a little bit.
Well, I know the answer to that. Sell it to Halliburton.
Yeah, well, sell it to, I mean, this is West Virginia. Who are you going to sell it to, Wayne?
Hey, how about Massey Cole?
There you go. Did you know that they just bought the football game between West Virginia University and Marshall?
Oh, no, I didn't.
You know, WVU and Marshall were finally...
Well, Don Nealon and you know, who's that guy from Marshall?
Yeah. Oh, Bob Pruitt.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Fiend.
They've been working for Massey for the last 10 years, anyway.
Well, here it is. I mean, my good friend Judy sent it to me.
So what's this going to be? The Cole Bowl?
Man, you're good. Here's the headline: MUWVU game now named Cole Bowl. The highly anticipated football game between Marshall University and West Virginia University, it now has a name, the Friends of Cole Bowl. For $100,000. For $100,000.
To get energized, and you just bummed me out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, yeah, sure. Turnpike, Massey. And then they can run their coal trucks on it, and the government can't say a damn thing about it, and it'll be like a gravel road in 2 years.
We own it.
And if you and if West Virginians bitched about the tolls going up now, oh Wayne,
wait a minute, I'm still stuck on the coal bowl. I mean, you know, everybody was so frightened that, I mean, everybody wants West Virginia and Marshall to play every year. I'd say with the coal bowl, that's guaranteed.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, $100,000 a year. From the Friends of Cole.
I like your name for him.
The Fiends?
Cole.
Yeah.
Yes. Well.
But I mean,
doesn't Magic Joe have to sign on to this?
No.
No? I mean, this is one thing that he doesn't want to be in control of?
Well, you get right down to it. It's probably Magic Joe's idea.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that at all.
Well, dig it. Coal Association President Bill Rainey said he entered negotiations with the schools shortly after Governor Joe Manchin announced the series in May 2005.
You ever met that little creep?
Oh, Bill Rainey?
Looks like Beaker.
Oh, well, yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I felt like I needed to like one of those science fiction delousings after I met him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, you definitely need one of those.
You ever been out in the woods and you walk through a spider web?
Yep.
And you spend the next 15 feet going,
There's one of them on me.
Yeah, that's what you get when you meet, you know, Blankenship or Rainey or any of those cretins.
Oh, man. The coal bowl.
The coal bowl.
Well.
You know, I wanted to go.
I did, too.
But it seems to me, you know, I love, my God, it's my alma mater. I love going to WVU football games. But more and more, it's like they've pushed me out. I'm a lifetime member of the WVU Alumni Association. That makes me sick. I mean, where does the prostitution end in this state or any other, Wayne?
Oh, gosh.
Now, this is the free market at work because it's going to fund scholarships.
Wonder what Greg LeRoy would have to say about this one.
Oh, as soon as the screaming died down.
Oh, God. I know. See, I've been busy. I'm on vacation, man. I've been getting ready for my son's wedding. So I haven't been reading the paper.
Well, it's good to get away from this stuff for a while.
But looks like vacation's over.
Well, you know, I read this stuff and my eyelashes curled.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay, well, I don't know what else to say.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do it to you, man.
I need a little recovery time here. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, after all, it's kind of Miller time.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go for another Guinness, buddy, if it's okay with you.
Highbrow.
Yeah.
There's nothing like stout.
Not the way I figure, anyway.
All right, Wayne, have yourself a great evening.
I'll let you go now.
All right, good luck with the wedding planning.
Oh, it's going to be great, only I think I'm going to need a bunch of pork and chicken. Okay?
All right, man.
I'll be talking to you.
All right, see you.
All right, brother.
Later. The coal bowl. You know, I think about wedding planning, and you know, I know Wayne, and Wayne's a, I've got this juxtaposition between him and that character Jennifer Lopez played in The Wedding Planner, and it just doesn't work for me. Agnes said break time. Okay. We'll take a break. We'll come back and roll out the rest of the show. If you want to get involved and get, you know, be under your bonnet, burr under your saddle, you know the drill. 877-443-2366. This is Head On, the Head On Radio Network, as a matter of fact. America's other liberal network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
Fight childhood asthma, then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome back. 18 minutes before the hour or so. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, our Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. And I have surprisingly, not gotten to a bunch of my prayer meeting stories. There's an Anglican Episcopalian get-together going on in Columbus, Ohio, where they tried to pass a moratorium on elevating any more gay bishops. And one side of the debate said, oh, pretty please, can't we just be a little bit bigoted so we can satisfy the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks who think that we're all Levites and quit reading the Bible right after they get past Deuteronomy? Please? Oh, it makes my head hurt. Gerard is joining us from Indiana. Hey, Gerard, welcome to the program. Good to talk to you. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. My ears picked up when I heard you mention the decision today by the Indiana Supreme Court, and I just wanted to call and maybe fill in some details.
Yeah, please do.
Just in case this comes to a turnpike near you.
And it will, it will.
So people know this, what they're talking about is the 8090 toll road, which basically runs along northern Indiana, connects Chicago and Toledo. So we're not talking, you know, we're talking like a major commercial thoroughfare.
Right. I mean, this isn't some low rent dirt road outside Kokomo.
Yeah, and it was orchestrated and shoved through basically by the governor. I think he was basically from what I can gather, he was basically a broker for this consortium. I believe they're from Australia and Indonesia or New Zealand or something.
Well, that's beginning to make it even better.
But what they get out of the deal is basically rights to the toll road to manage the toll road for the next 75 years. And his justification, and our governor, good old Mitch Daniels, by the way, who used to be on George W.'s staff, and has been associated with the Bush family for a long time. He claimed that it was because the state, the state treasury was in such bad shape that we needed to do this to give us kind of a shot in the arm here in Indiana. And I'm really reminded of things I know that you've talked about before, kind of about the drive to the bottom where, you know, these states, get in a bidding war to see who can give up as much as possible to get these corporations to come and build in their state, which has happened steadily over the last, even under Democratic governors.
Yeah.
The strategy is kind of the same. You know, if you get some resistance among the populace right away, you know, which did happen, there was a pretty concerted, attempt. That's why they ended up going to court to block this thing. But it appears that our his bumper stickers in his campaign said, "My man Mitch," but it appears our man Mitch has loaded the court as well. So I don't have any.
So is that an appointed court out there or elected or what, Gerard?
I believe for the most part they're elected, but I guess my point I'm trying to make is, people use it as a cautionary tale. I mean,
this somehow seems like the logical extension of more of this garbage. That I remember, 2 years ago maybe, Tom DeLay was trying to float a plan to make the entire interstate highway system one great big toll complex.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the Grover Norquist of the world just think this is wonderful because the free market can do no wrong and private enterprise can do no wrong. But of course, like I said, this will happen in 2-3 years from now. Your Indiana Turnpike, Gerard, is going to be a gravel road.
Yeah.
Because everything
they've already said the rates are going to, the toll rates are going to go up.
Right, because they're not going to go up for service, Gerard. They're going to go up because they have to service their stockholders.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's why, that's why West Virginia American Water Company sucks for air. Mm-hmm. The infrastructure stuff, forget that. We've got to pay dividends.
Yeah.
Let's not
raise the minimum wage, so God forbid the guys actually doing the improvements may be able to make a decent living.
Or be able to afford the tolls to drive to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is an abdication of the very most fundamental functions of any kind of enlightened government.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the Halliburton Turnpike.
Yeah.
You used to know it as I-65. I saw it, and like I said to Wayne, all the lights and bells and whistles just started clanging at sweat condition alpha, because this, when we get down to giving away the roads, then that is, for all intents and purposes, Gerard, that's the point where we realize that we have quit. We've given up on the idea of representative government.
Sure. It's definitely not any longer for the common good by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, you got to feel in a deal like this, and I don't have hard facts on this, but, somebody greased these wheels for this to happen, and somebody in the state assembly is getting a monetary reward for this to make sure this got through, or a political reward, so...
Well,
I was trying to be laid back. I was telling Agnes I was trying to be laid back today because it's my birthday. But
yeah,
when I heard that little story, I had to.
Yeah, no late. Sorry, it's the old joke where the punchline's coffee breaks over back on your head.
Yeah.
But happy birthday to you, man.
Well, thank you, and thanks for all you do. I'll let you wind up your program.
All right, you take care and try to relax a little bit. Birthdays come but once a year.
Okay.
And the important thing is that they keep on coming.
Yep.
All right. Take care, Gerard.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye now. Our good friend Gerard in Indiana. Happy birthday. A couple other birthdays going on in the chat room, too. Happy birthday all the way around. Solstice people. Got to be special. This has been an experience, sitting here doing naked radio. Just got that in for Agnes's benefit. Don't worry, honey. I don't secretly have the webcam up that she knows of.
That's just sick.
Oh, Janet Jackson's got nothing on you, dear. So that's. I'm going to set you on fire. Oh, next week on Lifetime, Farrah Fawcett is Agnes Kincaid in The Burning Bob.
Strawman, dear.
Yeah, that. Toll road lease. Yeah, yeah, because. Oh, well, okay, it's just a lease. It's a 75-year lease. And believe me, if this flies, if that flies in Indiana, you know, if it plays in Peoria, oh, sorry, Illinois, it will be coming to a toll road near you. The Pennsylvania Turnpike, the Ohio Turnpike. This is turning into Rollerball. You remember Rollerball, James Caan? Where there was no more nationality. It was they were just corporate divisions. This is Rollerball, and you know, the stack of stories that I have left alone tonight. I should be ashamed. You know, let's see. Lou Dobbs. Too little, too late, Dobbs. Headline, Congress stiffs working Americans. Really? You think? Duh!
Oh, that's bad.
Jinx. Let's try another one. Yeah, there it is. Senate nixes bid to raise minimum wage. Jeez. And it was just a raise to $5.85, 60 days after the signing of the bill. $5.85.
I suggest they cut their pay. For bad business.
Meanwhile, pay raise.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, and this one. Before we go, I want to make sure. Headline, this is some nasty, dying inmate says. Proclaiming his innocence, an admitted drug dealer was... Oh, well, okay, then that makes it all right. I hate the way these SOBs write. Proclaiming his innocence, an admitted drug dealer was executed Tuesday evening for a shooting spree in 1999 that left 3 men dead and 2 others wounded outside a Fort Worth convenience store. Lamont Reese, 28, had to be carried into the death chamber. I want everyone to know I did not walk to this because this is straight up murder. I am not going to play a part in my own murder. No one should have to do that. He expressed love to his mother and to relatives of the murder victims as they watched him from separate windows nearby. I do not know of your names, and I don't know how you feel about me, he said, addressing the victims' relatives. And whether you believe it or not, I did not kill them. As the drugs began taking effect, he said, this is some nasty. And then he gasped, and then he died, and then his mama, Brenda Reese, started pounding with her fists on the chamber window and began screaming repeatedly, they killed my baby. She kicked 2 holes in the death chamber wall and eventually was taken away. Good on you, mama. She sobbed and nearly collapsed as she reached the prison administration building across the street. Yea, verily, I have been to the mountain and was promised all this can be yours. The warden of the prison with the death chamber in Huntsville, Texas, goes home and has a nice meal after executions and so forth, and he sleeps well, and he gets up the next day, and he does it again, and, oh, well, when do we kill another Negro? Ah, yes, I see, that's a week and a half from now. There are some things that you cannot do. There are some things that you must not do in this country if you would call yourself a moral person. And one of those things is being, you know, prison warden and overseeing a death house. What would happen to society if we just didn't have the people who were willing to do evil things? Institutionally, mind you. Reese was pronounced dead at 6:27 p.m., 8 minutes after the drugs began to flow. You reckon on his deathbed, the warden of the Texas Penitentiary in Huntsville will say, "This is some nasty." Will he feel the hellish flames licking at his feet? "This is some nasty." Hate stories like that. And, of course, the Florida prison story. Oh, look, you know, we're so shocked by Abu Ghraib. Well, you know, look, prison guards at the women's prison in Florida had a little ongoing conspiracy where they traded drugs, booze, clothing, money, cigarettes for sex and silence. The indictments came out yesterday. Today, when the feds showed up, one of the prison guards who was involved in the whole scheme opened up with his weapon, shot down an FBI agent dead, and was himself killed. God bless America. God bless this great nation. See, I can't play that. God forgive America. God forgive America. God give us the strength to fix what's broke. Because, Lord, the list is long. That's it for tonight. We'll be back tomorrow night. Of course, I hope you will fire up your computers long about 3 o'clock Eastern Time. Join Guy James. Join Bruce Birch at 5. Be here with me at 7, because we love spending and sharing our time with you, and that you will share that most precious resource with us. My darling wife Agnes produced the show this evening, naked. It's the solstice, honey, once a year, come on. No... Brian Reznor announced the program. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers in Tallahassee, Florida. John Fox is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. He's in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, who has a fundraiser going on now, going quite nicely, but needs to go better. He makes all the streams work and the archives work for every program on the Head On Radio Network, as well as a great number of other liberal programs. Check it out. Make a donation. The shows of the Head On Radio Network, this and all the others, happen because every day the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights get up and go to work and build the American dream. And by what they're doing with us, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.